In the last episode, we looked at the question of whether it was rational to vote. And one of the things that we left off with was it may be rational if you perceive you have a duty to vote, and voting is your way of discharging that civic duty. But is that the case? Do you have a duty to vote? And if so, why?
Hi, welcome to the Morality of Everyday Things. That's what we're going to be discussing today. I'm Ant, one of the co-hosts.
And I'm Jake, the other co-host.
I'm
not a guest.
That is the sum total of co-hosts. Welcome. Thank you to everyone who leaves reviews on Spotify and Apple. And please, if you enjoy it, share it with your friends. Spark a discussion. That's, you know, the only little bit of good we want to do in the world. We don't need to vote. We do this podcast. That's much more influential.
Yeah, Thank you as well to everyone for whom we are your top one or top five podcast.
Yes.
Those Spotify rap stats were enjoyable and humbling. And yes, we appreciate it.
It's 171 people for whom we are their favorite podcast so far, and about 750 for whom we're in their top five. So that's very fun.
We'd love to hear from you guys. So please do get in touch.
Yep. And several thousand who follow on Spotify.
Woo. So
in fact, if it's 171 on Spotify, it's probably about 250 or 300-400.
Yeah, that's true. There are other channels.
Great. So on the face of it, it's not rational to vote if you think you're going to make a big difference in the election. We've kind of established that instrumental theories don't seem to be very persuasive.
They don't really hold up.
No. The adage that every vote counts is true, but the probability of your vote counting is tiny. However, there is certain rationality to the idea that voting is expressive, that to vote is to display commitment or affinity to a party, regardless of the outcome, and perhaps more importantly, the entire democratic process. There is also a rationale to the idea that voting is a civic duty, and you have to vote to discharge that duty. What does that mean? Why would that be the case? We'll look at that in more detail now. So how do you form this duty? Mm-hmm. What does that duty entail?
So to start with some data, surveys show that most citizens in contemporary democracies do believe there is some sort of moral obligation to vote. Other surveys show that most moral and political philosophers would agree. They tend to believe that citizens have a duty to vote, even when these citizens rightly believe that their favored party or candidate has no serious chance of winning. Further, most people seem to think that the duty to vote specifically means a duty to turn out to vote, perhaps only to cast a blank ballot or to spoil their ballot, as we can here, rather than a duty to vote in a particular way. On this view, citizens have a duty simply to cast any vote. Nearly any good faith vote would be morally acceptable. It's the turning up and participating that counts.
So one argument for the duty to vote is that individual votes make a significant difference, but you know, we've seen already that, you know, that doesn't seem to be the case, so we'll dismiss it out of hand.
In the bin.
Yeah.
Another popular argument is that voting is a duty because it prevents democracy from collapsing. And I suppose for this to be the case, there would have to be some sort of theoretical number of votes below which democracy would become unstable.
I know. I think that exists, mm-hmm. right? It's probably 50%.
Really?
Well, I mean, if you think about it logically, right? Like, democracy is supposed to be ruled by popular decision. And if suddenly the sum total of people voting is less than the majority of people, it becomes very hard to make the argument that this is a popular decision.
Yeah,
right?
Fair.
However, I mean, it's funny because
that would assume that the other half is sort of organized enough to be, you know, yeah. Presumably they're disorganized hordes rather than an organized rabble.
No. I mean that very specifically in that, like, the whole point is that it's popular rule, right? Mm. And so long as we have like 60-70% turnout, it's funny because rationally you could say, well, look, the other 51% who didn't turn out, like, that was their vote. Their vote was they don't mind, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Which means that this 40-something% vote is legitimate. But it starts to kind of veer into this area of, like, you know, we talked about mandates, like, oh, does the idea of a mandate really exist? And we were a little skeptical of it. Mm-hmm. But when you start to get, like, let's take it to the extreme. What if 10% of people turned out to vote and 6% of people voted for a party? Suddenly, like,
you wouldn't feel it was so legitimate.
You wouldn't feel it was legitimate. And now the really specific context to this as well is think about the US, for example, right? What happens when you start to have voter suppression, right? So this is kind of like, we can also at some point discuss, like, what makes a democracy legitimate. And part of it is, like, the collection of enough opinions, right? So this is all kind of the negative statement. The positive statement is you have a duty to try and avoid this happening because democracy is fundamentally good for people and humanity. It seems to be the kind of, like, expression of freedom and choice and betterment for individuals that we eventually see along the political, like, evolution. Sorry, went straight into that, a little diatribe.
No, that's okay. I mean, what I had in my notes, it's interesting. What I had in my notes was that it seems to follow the same mathematical issue as the idea that every vote would count, in that, like, the probability of your vote being the one not cast that influences the number tipping over the threshold would be small. But I take your point. I think when you do extrapolate it to a potential extreme of, like, only 10% of people have voted, you start to question.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the inverse mandate, right?
Yeah, it's the inverse of mandate. And it's funny because, like I said, if 10% of people turn up, like, if 100% of people turned up and 90% of people spoiled their ballot,
yeah,
and 6% of people voted for someone,
that would be quite a strong signal.
Yeah, it'd be a strong signal. But okay, now let's change this a bit. Let's say that the two parties in contention have extremely divergent views. Actually, no, sorry, this is just an economic equilibrium thing. It's like, well, then 90% of people wouldn't spoil their ballot, or like, mm-hmm. well, 90% of people don't mind between these two options. Like that is mm-hmm. the expression. But that's the thing. It's the assurance of like, I don't mind, not I wasn't able to vote, or I have in some way been influenced not to vote, right?
Yeah,
it's for that communication of like legitimizing a decision which is for the betterment of all of us, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way that, for example, paying taxes is a duty you have because it's for the betterment of all of us. You're maintaining infrastructure that is vital to all of our survival and prosperity.
And you're saying voting is like the act that maintains democracy.
It's the act that maintains our political infrastructure. Yes, it's the metaphorical cash. I mean, in some sense, if you could take like a Nozick style approach, the fact that you are mandating some of my time means it is literally cash.
Yeah, it's time is money.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, that gives that argument more weight than I gave it in my notes, which I like. It's always fun to change your mind having these discussions. There are three further kinds of arguments that don't rely on the assumption that the outcome of the vote matters.
Right.
Three other kind of arguments that you have a duty. Those are the generalization argument, which says not to vote is to free ride on the actions of other voters.
Interesting.
The civic virtue argument, which says citizens have a duty to exercise civic virtue, which you do by voting.
Is that necessarily the case or coincidentally, correlatively the case?
What do you mean?
Is the act of engaging in voting going to make you more civically, like, is it one of the requirements of being civically virtuous?
Yeah, it's a requirement. But how does that define it?
Or is it that it like it's an activity that like will make you learn about stuff, which will make you more civically virtuous? Because if it's the former, then like, I thought the whole point is we're supposed to be defining why it's in the set of things that's civically virtuous.
Because it's defined that way. We'll come to that. I thought I interpreted it originally as voting is a way of. Let's see. We'll come to it. And then lastly, the complicity argument, which says you must vote in order to avoid being complicit with injustices committed by bad government. If you don't vote, bad government gets in. You're kind of accountable.
Yeah. So basically, it's coming back to that kind of example I said where 90% of people spoil their vote or don't vote.
And then the Nazis get in.
It's like, well, you know, if you've spoiled your vote, you've said that's okay with you.
Yeah. So let's look quickly at each of these. The first one is the generalization argument. This is quite funny. It goes like this. What if everyone were to stay at home and not vote? The results would be disastrous. Therefore, I, you, she, he should vote. This can easily be parried, though, because even if nobody or too few people perform an action, it's not necessarily a justification that everyone should do it. It's like the opposite of the slippery slope.
Mm.
For example, I'm sure we can think of a funnier analogy, but the one I have here. What if everyone were to stay at home and not farm? Then we would all starve to death. Therefore, we should all become farmers.
Yeah.
Which is obviously ridiculous because it doesn't matter that everyone becomes a farmer as long as enough people are farmers. Yeah.
Well, actually,
market incentives will mean that we can all eat.
This is a great example of equilibrium.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. The price for goods changes to incentivize enough people to farm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then people based on their personal preferences make choices based on that, which is exactly how voting works, right? Mm-hmm. Like as fewer people turn out to vote, your vote becomes more valuable. Price of a vote goes up. And so more people who are like borderline based on their different sets of preferences will decide, oh, actually now it's worth it.
However, now let me give you another analogy, which sounds somewhat more persuasive. There are kinds of actions where it's appropriate for everyone to do it or not to do it. And it's because of the nature of the equilibrium. It's the tragedy of the commons effect.
Right, you see
what I mean. For example, take a keep off the grass sign. It's not as though the grass will die if just one person walks in it.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you, let's say Ant has the special privilege to walk in the grass and no one else can, the rest of us look jealously on as he strides across the fresh green.
God, this is so lush and dewy and...
But it would be unfair, right? It would be unfair, and it would seem more appropriate to impose the duty on everyone equally rather than to allocate the sense of special privilege. It's the same way that the government could decide to tax people at random to raise money, but instead they impose this duty on society.
Right, okay, and they base taxation principles on conceptions of fairness that we can all agree on and apply to us all equally. It's expressions of other kind of moral principles that we have. I understand that. And then also, just on the grass analogy, you know, if it says keep off the grass, part of it's like, oh, you know, like what's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it's also what's practical, right?
Exactly.
Because if everyone didn't keep off the grass, it would ruin the grass.
Yeah.
Right. And then no one would benefit from there being this nice grass.
And this kind of ties the argument together. Is voting more like the first case, like farming, where there would be a natural market equilibrium, or the second case, keeping off the grass, where there's a potential free rider scenario?
Right. And so we need to make sure everyone keeps off the grass, both because it would otherwise ruin the grass and because it would be unfair to allow just, you know, some people to do
it. Yeah. Because it would be unclear to be like, sometimes keep off the grass because, you know, that doesn't work. And if Ant walks on the grass, grass, he benefits from everyone else keeping off it, but he doesn't follow the rules. If he doesn't become a farmer, he'll still pay for food like everyone else, which compensates the people who do become farmers. And so the question, the kind of the underlying question of do you buy into this generalization argument as a sort of moral duty, is do non-voters free ride on voters?
Well, this, it feels like if you're saying that it's like the keep off the grass thing, and this is something we're going to discuss in the next episode, I think that's really a justification for the, like, we should mandate. We should force everybody to vote, right? There should be very exceptional reason as to why you otherwise did not keep off the grass, right? I feel like practically, this is a tough one. So the reason that we vote is for that kind of collective communication of how we think the government should go. I don't know that I agree that everyone should be forced to vote. I think that there should be an opportunity. What am I trying to say? Actually, imagine a world where it was like the cost of voting was practically nil, right?
And that world, which isn't far off.
That world exists, right? It's by decision that we make it hard or costly for people to vote. It could be much easier.
It could be digital. It could be digital, but
there's risks with security, but it could be digital. It could also be that we just invest more physical time and infrastructure to making it easier to everyone for everyone to vote. People could bloody postal vote. It's not that hard to postal vote, for example, right? In that world, do I think it's reasonable to require everyone, and can we make it even clearer for people, have a box that says I don't mind, right? If that exists,
I'm spoiling my ballot.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, doodle
it's,
here
it's I am not voting. You vote by saying I'm not voting. In that world, like, yeah, I actually think that everyone should be required, right? Because then we're making sure that we are collecting the plurality of opinions. I guess it's a kind of weird dystopian question, like what happens when 95% of people do vote I don't mind.
Yeah. That becomes trickier.
It also introduces a sort of difficulty. I mean, okay, flip it around like this. What if we introduce a fine for not voting and someone decides, like, oh, actually, like,
I'd
rather pay the fine than having to bother filling in this form. But yeah, so I think the practical answer is the farmer example, like it's equilibrium. I can buy into an argument, given costs being sufficiently low, of it being a keep off the grass example, like everyone must adhere to this rule.
Yeah, philosophers have tried to make the case that non-voters free ride on voters' efforts.
Why is it free riding? What's the benefit that they're deriving?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, they're basically saying that voting is the act that provides a government. And if you don't vote, but you get a government provided by everyone else taking the time and effort. But I feel could quite a lot of credit.
Could you not see it the other way around, where like people who are voting are taking advantage of people who, not necessarily people who decide not to vote, but people who, for whatever reason, it's impractical to vote, right? Like, you know, you have to take a bus, you can't get out of work. It's like, this is a big American problem.
You're saying they're taking advantage of their lack of access.
Yeah, they're actually being subsidized to get governments they want at the expense of people who don't get to vote for the governments they want. Like, I'd actually see that the other way around.
I think I totally agree. I think it's a sort of paradigm perspective thing. It's taking the lens that voting is a duty and applying it to the example and saying, because voting's a duty, if you don't bother to vote, you're free riding.
Yeah.
But you could just as easily flip it in the way you've just done.
I could see a world where, like, hey, you know, we do reach that kind of 95% voter apathy thing. Like, then I could start to see an argument where, like, okay, no, like, we do actually need to form a government. There needs to be, maybe mandates aren't a huge argument, but like at the extremes, they seem to matter, right? Like when 100% of people vote for something, we should definitely do it. And when 5% of people start to vote for something, it starts to become a bit iffy, even if that's the majority vote, right? It's the same reason that, like, they'll do, like, for example, presidential things where they'll do like multiple rounds, where like the first one is like runoffs, you know, like what I mean there? Where like they'll have like a field of 5-10 candidates,
and then when whittle it down.
Exactly. When someone doesn't get the popular vote, i.e. more than 50%, they're like, okay, let's remove some of the other candidates, now do it again.
Yeah. Right. I do quite like that.
Because they're trying to establish mandate. Because you have a duty to help establish mandate, and they have a duty to have a mandate in order to like justify doing things they do. Maybe I'm coming around on the mandate argument.
Okay, let's move on to the second argument. And if you remember, that one was citizens have a duty to exercise civic virtue, and therefore they must vote.
Is that kind of like just a Platonic ideal, like part of being a good person is being civically virtuous?
And actually, now that I read ahead, I have said this seems circular. It kind of defines itself into existence.
Which is part of what we said earlier, right? It seems like to say it's correlative, like, oh, the practice of being informed and reading up who you're going to vote helps make you like a better citizen. But to simply say part of being a good person is voting doesn't really answer why it's part of the set of things that makes you a good person.
Exactly.
I think it's also really interesting. I'll just get up a quote. Like I mentioned, there's a guy called Lippmann. There's a fantastic quote on this. And he basically says that actually we kind of set an unreasonable standard. So like you could make this argument like, oh, being engaged, learning about the policies and things helps you be a better citizen.
Right? Sure.
However,
What does Lippmann say?
A lot of this stuff, by the way, to say that you have a duty to vote presupposes that democracy is a good thing, that like popular opinion should matter to democracy.
It's true.
Quote from Lippmann, a commentator and philosopher from the 20th century. Democracy is much too important to be left to popular opinion. And also you can think of the famous Churchill quote, like, democracy is the worst system except for all the other ones we've tried. Basically, sorry, on this point of civic virtue, you know, people should engage and learn, and that's part of like who you vote for. Lippmann would say something that basically, like, part of the problem with democracy is that that is an unreasonable standard. Mm-hmm. Like, experts in fields still have to make generalized stereotype views on things within their field, mm-hmm. because there's only so much you can know, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this, it's also this this reflection of kind of media culture in 20th, 21st century, where, like, okay, we're seeing like trimmed pictures and stereotypes of things that we've not really experienced. And then when you're a voter, you're experiencing hundreds of them.
In again, a diluted fashion.
In right? a diluted fashion, fed to you in a narrative through some media machine. Mm. So even being up to date, it's just not possible. It's just, it's more like how many of the stereotypes of the things that you should know are you familiar with?
Which Facebook groups are you way above?
Exactly. I would actually be interested in doing, maybe we'll cut it in at some point, like, is democracy such a good thing? Like, should we? I mean, we did do Is Democracy the Best We Can Do? We discussed that actually in a previous episode.
We did, yeah, with Cliff Mark, actually.
Yes,
shout
we did.
Cliff.
But maybe we'll revisit it and pop it in somewhere. Maybe it's an upcoming one. Sorry.
Or maybe we refresh that one and put it ahead of this series. So on this second argument that citizens have a duty to exercise civic virtue and therefore to vote, it does suffer the problem that they've kind of, it's kind of defined. It's basically said civic virtue is a good thing. Voting belongs in the set of acts that demonstrate civic virtue. Therefore, you must vote. The thing is, there's presumably loads of possible acts of civic virtue. Voting, it doesn't necessarily explain why voting specifically is an act that you must do. The duty of civic virtue could be discharged surely in other ways, like doing social work or, you know, writing media articles, doing this podcast.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Even working a productive job that adds to the social surplus. These are all ways of being good citizens.
And, yes.
I think this argument's, I don't know.
It's, yeah, maybe we've not properly understood it or engaged with it, but it seems to just define itself into existence, right? I mean, if you just say part of, like, you should be civically virtuous, part of being civically virtuous is voting, it's like, well, yes, but why is it part of the set of things that makes you civically virtuous? I can see a bunch of arguments. Like, I can see that, like, it's a bunch of arguments that then rely on those other strains of argument. Like, oh, you're helping to provide mandate, you're not being a free rider, etc. Like, I can see that being the case. And also the, oh, you don't want to be complicit with bad government, right?
Yes, thank you. That's the segue into the third argument. And that is the complicity argument. It was by, the reference I have is someone called Beerbohm. I've probably pronounced that horribly. I've only read your name. Sorry, Beerbohm. That argument goes that citizens have a duty to avoid complicity with injustice. Since representatives act in the name of citizens, citizens who don't vote are therefore complicit in allowing those representatives to commit injustice. Surely no more complicit than the people who voted them in. So if you didn't vote, is it fair to say you are equally culpable as a Trump voter?
No, I mean, well, the argument isn't whether it's equal or not.
No,
the question is whether you're culpable.
Whether you're culpable at all.
To some extent. And I would say, yes, you're culpable to some extent. You're clearly, I mean, remember though, people have different perspectives on what's good and bad and right and wrong. So like the idea of culpable implies a objectively agreed idea of what's right or wrong. So
it does.
You know, hey, Trump did some things like that a lot of people don't agree with. Some people think it was good though, right? So it's a little hard to kind of assign these things, but certainly from your own perspective or from, say, from example, your intergroup's perspective, like, yeah, you might be complete. Like if you are an anti-Trump person who hangs out with a bunch of anti-Trump people, then yeah, like I could see the argument that like your other intergroup members might say you are to some extent complicit.
Yeah.
Not as complicit as the people who voted for Trump, but you know, at least their failing was, you know, in the view of someone who disagrees with them, was some kind of more base level premise as to why the things he was doing was right. And you would kind of engage with those points rather than saying, why did you allow them to do it? So for example,
there's a good qualification there.
Let's say it's different to, for example, someone is religious and by whatever modern standards, I don't know, like oppresses women, right? It's one thing to be the person doing that, and then the problem that you'd have is engaging with their religious ideals that are leading them to do that, versus being someone who just like sees it happening and does or says nothing, right? And the intergroup, it would almost be, I don't want to say more forgivable, but like it would almost be like in the former case where like the, you know, they're from some a different religious perspective on how you should treat people. You almost feel like, okay, we can talk about that. You can explain your perspective, I can explain my perspective, and maybe like you've inherited beliefs that I don't agree with, and even if I can't change your mind, like at least I understand like you have been brought up with the ideal and it's coherent for you. Whereas in the former case, it's like, you are actually abdicating some responsibility that you agree, you probably agree that you have, right? Mm-hmm. So you're actually doing wrong and you know it, whereas in the former case, they don't realize they're doing wrong.
Wait, so you're saying the people...
It was a convoluted kind of example.
Yeah, but you're sort of saying...
Maybe we can make a better analogy.
Bystanders and criminals.
Yes.
Right. Well, I'm not saying they are criminals it's a criminal thing.
No, take a criminal thing. But what's an example of a criminal thing where someone doesn't realize they're doing wrong?
That's the bit I wanted to get at, though. Yep. You're saying the quote-unquote criminal, the metaphorical criminal in this analogy, you're saying you can find forgiveness for their views if they're being coherent, but the bystander who knows the criminal's done something wrong and does nothing about it.
Yes.
Is...
Exactly. Let's take spanking children. Okay. Right? Like, maybe you are from a different culture, or I don't know, you're a time traveler, you move forward in time, and it was acceptable in the 30s or whatever to hit your child, right? It's one thing to say, oh, hey, look, by the way, that's here's the reasons that's not acceptable. And then if they start to, like, have some premises you really disagree with on a moral principle level, like, you can start to think maybe they're a bad person, not just someone who doesn't understand. Mm. But then, yeah, to be a bystander implies understanding that was wrong and doing nothing.
Mm. Well, this links to you've kind of hit on the essence of this theory, and what makes it interesting is it implies, bringing it back to voting, the complicity argument implies more than just a duty to vote. It implies a duty to vote for candidates and policies that will reduce injustice. And potentially, like you're saying, that brings in some subjective standards around what is good and what is bad.
Yep.
And we're talking about how, yeah, exactly like you say, to vote for quote-unquote bad government that commits injustice would be potentially as bad. Not as bad. Sorry, I'm fumbling my words here. But you know what I mean? To not vote could be seen as being culpable for introducing a bad government as well.
Yeah, okay, I could see that. However, it also implies a kind of greater connection between voting and outcomes than there is.
Mm.
When that instrumental connection is weak, like, does that really follow? Like, you know, let's take an example. Okay, we're in whatever convoluted example where someone's doing wrong, like, do I have a responsibility to tweet at them, right? Yeah. If I think the instrumental action of tweeting at them is not going to do anything.
Mm.
Right? Like, am I actually culpable for not, you know, reaching out on social media?
Yeah.
If I think that as an instrument is very unlikely, especially considering, hey, if I choose not to vote, but I'm like a agitator or a, God, what's the word for people who...
You're engaging in civil disobedience.
Yeah. Specifically like raising attention for things. If I'm an activist, an agitator, you know, I'm actively doing things, but I don't vote. Like, surely those former things are actually more important.
Mm. Well, this is it. And it's the same problem the civic virtue argument possibly has, which is that if you have a duty to vote or a duty to avoid complicity in injustice by voting, voting is surely not the only thing that you could do. Mm. You could, like you say, you could engage in civil disobedience. You could write letters to newspaper editors. You could write pamphlets. You could write articles.
Yeah.
You could write whole political theory books. You could donate money. You could engage in conscientious abstention. You could protest. You could assassinate criminal political leaders.
Yeah. I mean,
there's loads of things you can do.
Some of the most influential people in political history weren't big, weren't famous for their voting and weren't even in politics. Like, when you think about the most influential people in the history of politics, I'm thinking about people like Marx.
Mm-hmm.
Disseminating your view
is
probably way more influential, right? Plato. Right. Mm. Like, Plato influences things now.
Yeah.
Because he disseminated his view. Right. So maybe to discharge your civic virtue is to express your opinion. And yeah, like, maybe some people will ignore it, but at least you've put out your opinion and given it a chance to be heard and spread.
Have you heard of the theory of easy aid?
No. Go on.
This might come to the rescue here, because easy aid is a deontological duty which says if you can provide aid to others at a very low cost to yourself, then you should do it.
Oh, I thought this was Good Samaritanism.
Possibly. It might be a similar name. But what I've got here in the notes is that assuming citizens are well-informed, voting
well,
is
that's an... Well, that's a huge assumption. Yeah.
Voting is an act of easy aid, because it's not a case of one or the other, voting or protesting. You can do both, and voting is a low cost.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like, yeah, sure, do all those other things, be as activist as you want, but vote anyway, because voting is low cost to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's the idea.
But that's not strictly true, is it, in the case of voter suppression?
Because you're saying because they don't have easy access.
It's not low cost to yourself.
Yeah, yeah, if you have to take time.
This is actually something I articulated earlier where I was like, well, if it's sufficiently low cost.
Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay, one final interesting caveat. Do you ever have a duty not to vote?
Mm.
So what if you are indifferent to the election? If your vote is an act of easy aid and you don't care about the outcome, so vote for Trump, it's a bit like donating money to a corrupt charity. Well, I mean, these are subjective statements.
Again, yes.
I take your point.
It's just putting Trump in the notes.
So let's put it this way. Yeah, like, if you are indifferent between A and B, you could actually see some argument where, like, my influencing the decision between A and B is actually unfair. Right?
If you think you're really uninformed, should you just not vote because it's... Yeah.
Or put it like this. Like, you're in a group of people, right? And some of them want Chinese for dinner and some of them want Italian for dinner,
and it like
comes
both.
and you genuinely don't mind, and it comes down to you to decide, and you're gonna disappoint some group of people by making that decision, you'd actually be like, I genuinely don't mind. You should find a more legitimate way for you guys to decide between you.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, find an arbitrator.
Exactly. Don't force
for moderation.
Don't force me to make a decision between two outcomes I don't care about when clearly you do care about it.
Yeah. I think there's a kind of irony though, because imagine you had the humility in voting to be like, I don't think I'm well informed enough.
Mm.
I feel like there's a sort of just, yeah, it almost feels like you're actually, you know what, you probably should be qualified to vote. That's,
if there's some, like, imagine you could have some sort of like secondary vote where it's like, look, I don't mind, but if you really need a tiebreaker,
yeah,
like don't count me in the normal thing, but if you really need.
Yeah. I guess that comes down to an argument that, you know, you should be well informed. And obviously, as we've said, that's a big assumption that most citizens are. Well, hopefully we'll have time to talk about that in a future episode. But yeah, in that case, you've always got the option to spoil your ballot, of course. So wrapping up this episode, what do you reckon, and do we have a duty to vote?
I think you have a duty to be as informed as is reasonably possible, with the understanding that, like, ultimately, like, there's a limit to that, to be engaged. But then I don't think that necessarily follows to a duty to vote in itself, right? So in those cases where, like, say for example, you have made the conscious decision that you genuinely don't mind between the options, I actually don't think it's unreasonable. I mean, like I said earlier, and again, this is kind of the easy aid argument, or the good Samaritanism. If it was sufficiently easy, it really cost you nothing. Yeah, okay, put in a vote and spoil the ballot. Or like, they should provide an option that says indifferent, right? Or pick your very minor difference, whatever. But like,
that would take away the fun of spoiling your ballot, though, when you can just draw a big X through all of
them. Yeah, or draw a dick on it or something. I don't think necessarily, though, that you have a duty to vote. Like, put it like this. Would I rather that someone was informed on it and was like, I don't mind, and I genuinely don't mind, and I'm, for that reason, I'm not going to vote, or that someone uninformed who's been watching Fox News turns up and votes for Trump? I'd actually far prefer the former, you know. And then the kind of the layer on top of that is, like, I'd prefer even more than the former if it was easy enough to vote that, like, that same person could just be like, well, okay, I'll either tick an I don't mind or spoil my ballot, or pick my very minor preference.
I suppose the critical caveat there is what you were saying about access, right? So assuming voting is low cost, then of course. But with that caveat allowed for, if it actually, you know, if society is sort of structured in such a way it's hard to vote, then.
This is one thing that's actually interesting. We didn't talk about this with voting, and we kind of touched on that with that example, like Chinese food, Italian food, right? One thing that voting doesn't do well is it doesn't account for intensity of belief. Right? And I suppose one way that it maybe does is by people not voting, right? Because one of the measures is like, do you care enough about this issue to bother voting? Right? That's actually, it's actually quite a nice, so say for example, I'd said earlier, like, oh, you know, mandates, etc., blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, what happens if something only gets a 5% vote? And it's like, well, you know what? Some things aren't that interesting. some things people don't care about. So yeah, like, actually, let's say there was some crazy vote about, I don't know, like, should we extend cycle paths by like 15 centimeters, right? If that doesn't hit like a 2% vote, should we not do it? Even though, like, you know, bureaucrats or civil servants are like, ah, you know, this is a decent policy. Like, the idea that everything should get that much attention, right? Like, there are a lot of stuff that people genuinely just don't care about that much.
And the handful of people who do probably do intensely.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some cyclists who really care about it, and some civil servants who've done a bunch of research and like, no, this will ruin traffic flows, or there's a bunch of builders who don't want to do the work. Like, you know, I'm actually kind of flipping myself on that now. Like, maybe sometimes, especially in a world where more and more we just see political parties that are largely very similar, the only difference is like slight taxation differences. Is it that illegitimate to say, like, I'm actually fine with this, I really don't mind, and like, the bothering to vote is like actually a nice pricing mechanism to say, like, do you actually care about this?
Yeah. One thing I just remembered, and I'm gutted I forgot to put this in the notes at all, was, do you remember Kenneth Arrow's impossibility theorem?
Remind me.
He was the economist who basically said it's impossible to express people's preferences properly through majority voting. And I was just thinking when you said that, I was like, imagine the restaurant example again, and you talked about intensity. Imagine someone's like, I really want Chinese food, and the other two people are like, kind of fancy a pizza, but I don't care that much. What's like the right
Chinese
outcome?
The Chinese food guy would be like, I'm not going to come if we don't go to,
Then you're like, I didn't like him anyway, so let's go for pizza.
Well, that's exactly the situation. Or like, flip it around, like, just for the sake of getting into that tiebreak situation. Two people are like, we really want Chinese, we're not going to eat otherwise. Like, we're going to come to the meal and be moody, or we're not going to come. And two people are like, yeah, kind of fancy Italian. And then it comes down to you to make the decision, right? Like, that's exactly when you'd be like, no, like, this is actually, it's not fair to put this responsibility on me, because I don't mind. You guys, particularly the people who want the Italian food, should negotiate with these people, and you guys should come to a compromise.
And this is where, if you're an uninformed voter and you're like, we're we're going for burgers.
Yes, exactly.
Or even, no one wins.
Or yeah, I mean, like we took something, you know, petty and trivial. Trivial. This is the case where you start to get like, okay, let's say some people hold some generally agreed to be negative views, mm-hmm. and they're balancing out with people who very strongly think, no, we should do the right thing, right? And then you're in the middle, and all of your information has been fed to you through media machines that, you know, perhaps have a bias towards the, mm-hmm. the quote unquote bad stuff. Then suddenly it's like, actually, it may be better that you don't vote, like, and that you can have the humility to be like, I don't know enough about this. Like, you guys should talk it out. Mm-hmm. This is all kind of leaning on the kind of Lippmann argument that, like, maybe we should have more technocrats. And to be fair, we kind of do. We vote for representatives
who then are paid to be informed
yeah. and to make these decisions. And even then, though, are they? Are they actually informed? Or are they then just introducing a bunch of biases for themselves to their own long-term career?
Yeah, exactly. And they've got to appeal to the party. Interesting. Arrow is super cool. I mean, he came up with a genuinely sort of sound mathematical proof that there's no method of voting that satisfies all the things you'd want voting to be. And it's too much detail to go into here, but we'll link it. It's really interesting.
We'll squeeze into one. Should you be able to sell your vote? Should mandatory voting be a thing?
All right. Thank you, guys. See you next time.